geometry, or that you're even using calculus. So it's in there, but you're not necessarily aware of it. So I'm saying that a brain that has been allowed to see the codified workings of certain things, being able to read music, when it is exposed to this accelerator, it has a radically different experience. So Mark wanted to kind of not refute that or speak to that.
Well, you want to speak to that, and I guess we're in the traditional boxing ring at this moment, because I want to hold those ideas up to what I think are some pretty serious chops.
Okay.
I want to start with the idea of education and knowledge and learning itself. You can put this in terms of world travel, because anybody who's done any travel knows that you can never understand what a culture is really like until you've actually visited a place. You'll never get the feel for it. You can get close with movies. You can become quite knowledgeable with literature and things. You can get into it, close to it. But the actual environment is the real McCoy, basically. I would use a comparison of anybody who's a Japanese film lover, go to Japan. You will be astonished. But anyway, to get to this idea of world travel is there. Now, what about a person who can't travel? What about a genius who can't travel? Is he less capable of enlightenment than a genius who can travel? Right? Will his path be maybe longer, but necessarily reach the same place? Or can he use that rocket fuel to get himself all the way there quickly, as you suggest? I don't know. So let's continue to the next level, sort of the level down. Now we're talking about people maybe they're not that smart, essentially. You know, they're not really, let's call it, sophisticated. And you've heard me use that word every once or twice before. I consider myself to be a sophisticated person, but to me, and you're a very sophisticated person too, and you know, just on a personal note, to any listeners, Bill and I first began to talk to each other through email, and the ideas that we discussed were incredibly complex and deep, and resonating with, to me, what was a truly abysmal depth, and I was very disappointed by Bill's writing ability, essentially. I thought he was quite a crappy writer, and although his thoughts were very good. And then I got to talk to him on the radio, and I felt like the biggest idiot on the block, because, man, is this guy articulate. Like, he might be the single most articulate person I've ever talked to in my life. A guy can put together ideas on the fly while talking like nobody else I've ever heard. I actually consider that to be an improvement upon writing. To me, the articulated word is, it's because it's better. I'm talking to you now, you're talking to me. I can question you. You know, you can come away from my work, some of which I think is dazzlingly brilliantly written. But you can come away from my work with whatever opinion you want. You know, you can decide what it means. But if you talk to me about what it means, you're going to get the definition that I want. Right? That's what happens when people talk. That's what happens when they talk. So, you know, an extraordinary, you know, as Nabokov said, I think like a genius, I write like a distinguished author, and I speak like a child, basically. You know, so again, now we're talking about variegations of different types of abilities. We could call them media abilities, because even the spoken word is a form of media. Media just means something in between, right? It's the method by which a spoon is media, right? Because it's not your hand. It's not all the food is not always touching your body. It's media to your mouth, basically. So, you know, so what we're really talking about then is media exposure. Now, and media exposure also applies to things like, say, going to a place. That's a form of a media event as well. You are mediating. Travel is a medial event. The act of traveling, you're going somewhere, you're not there yet. When you get there, you're there.
Okay.
Right? So, and of course, that applies even to meandering type of travels. There's always some kind of medial destination in mind, basically. And then you're forced very few people just wander around with no destination whatsoever. Only the true traveler, and most people are pretty rad, quite frankly. But anyway, so with that in mind, so we have this idea that we can see how the experience of education, learning, the culture of maybe culture, what I would ultimately call sophistication, because culture narrows down geographic areas, right? Where sophistication is just general of sort of artistic expression of thought, exposure to different ideas, and some of them becoming very complex. All of that other stuff, which you see, is a kind of medium. So what you're
they're going to think to me, Alex Jones,
the ultimate,
oh, he's talking about it. Let me go listen to Alex Jones or David Icke.
Meaning of your thesis would have to be that someone in a total mental blackout could not have any kind of enlightening experience. Like, say, if you gave the mushroom to someone, if you'd been in solitary confinement for a decade, what would happen to them? Right? That person who'd lived in a total mental blackout.
Okay.
Or a blind person, for instance. How is the experience different for a blind person?
But let me without a community of sort of talk to, you're just going to buy more Alex Jones books, you're going to buy more
something here then.
Books, you're going to maybe go to a conference or
taking
two.
The nomadic brain versus the classically educated brain, and this notion of the classical education as the scaffolding that holds the rocket in place for appointed and immediate...
I don't know if that code 40... It doesn't seem like trip a cancer of
straight up and out just to get the breaking open the head experience. It's
sort of provides a platform, a stable platform for which that experience can
So it takes the randomness out of the greater picture. It is possible that the nomadic brain, in its swirling, chaotic balloon kind of motion, can reach and ascend and go into the same realm.
Practice.
I'm saying that it's possible,
the culture you're talking about is really solidifying itself among the corporations realizing just what they could do with it in the 80s and especially with music, and then it's sped up to a point now where musicians completely aren't musicians and everybody's listening to disposable crap, and obviously that's going to lead to, like, I guess disposable lifestyles, disposable culture, whatever you want to call that. But I think we have a lot more hope in you know, people who are interested in sing or people who just don't buy all the drugs and converting to that and something else, and I guess everybody else just have to figure it out. But about, you know, selling commodities and spiritainment in industry and what that's become, like I'm saying, they go at each other's necks just so after they can sit back and go, okay, how many tips do we have? Oh, maybe we should be more angry at each other at the next convention or something like that. See all that.
Oh, yeah,
it's like a reality TV show. They're actually told, I mean, I've known a lot of people who were, you know, I live in New York, so you have restaurants and different media outlets, so people try and, you know, approach people with reality show things for different reasons. My wife worked for a restaurant where they came in and wanted to do, I don't know, what is that, Hell's Kitchen or something. And, you know, their whole thing was like, oh no, so how do you feel about your coworkers? And everyone's like, oh yeah, she's doing, it's like, you know, make up a reason to hate that person. So, alright, you hate her, and then, you know, she wants to fuck him. It's like, well, that's actually... So, whatever. So, yeah, you have this idea of conflict causes rating, so there is definitely that. And then, you talk about the disposable glass, and if you remember Demolition Man, what was the whole thing in the future? Everyone listens to jingles, like commercial jingles.
Commercial jingles over and over, yeah, and they sing them aloud, happily.
Yeah, so not only is it disposable, but it's also, like, reinforcing, you know, but essentially brainwashing. I mean, what is commercials and jingles? I mean, this is a really scary thing. If you think about it right now, if I mention a Kit Kat, you could probably think of a Kit Kat song really easy, and it might get stuck in your fucking head.
Break me off a piece of it. See, I couldn't think of it. Now it's stuck. With the mono.
Or, I mean, you name a product, and there's probably, this is where we get into, like, there's a gentleman who called it, you know, colonization of the mind, is that ultimately what these marketing companies have done is they own a little piece of your brain. So, you know, it is going to be, you're going to be 70 years old, and someone's going to say Kit Kat to you, and you're like, it's like, motherfucker, it's in there. It is stuck in there.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, the question would be, how do you purge that, or how do you live a lifestyle where that's not, you know, obviously if Kit Kat's in, what else is in there? I think is an excellent, you know, question to just sort of throw out there. I don't know that we can answer it, but
Wikipedia says it's a reference to pop songs and movie quotes.
What do you call
Last Train to Parksville?
I think but what the here, whole him crazy Alex Jones, David Icke, Michael Cerin, etc. thing is, it's kind of like the ego's own version of Gyan Yoga in a way. Because it is yoga. I mean, you're basically yoga of the intellect, where you're making, you're connecting dots, and you're exercising that faculty, which is an amazing faculty that we have. And what we energetically get out of it is something, but it's like manipulating a drive that we all have, like, towards understanding.
Basically,
and you have a sense that you understand, but it's still superficial because you're just seeing how all the ego connect, basically, which is all a fucking coping mechanism to escape the fear of death.
Down and dirtiest world, and probably come out of it relatively unscathed, essentially, using your intelligence to, I mean, obviously there's always risks involved, kissing the queen and going into the down and dirty world, but it's very dangerous things to do, but or meeting the queen is a dangerous thing to do, but anyway, so, you know, but you have that ability, so that's the framework from which you're building.
But it's interesting that it is the same technique that's at play, it's just used in a different direction in a different way, so I think it's like there's like a understanding
and so
that we have
going from Lars von Trier's book, The Idiots, I want to sum it up with what I think is, aside from
the
Bible,
basis of like,
which was probably
all,
written by
like,
the same guy,
religion
and aside from
mysticism,
the Hebrew letters,
so we
I
have
highly recommend for
us,
everyone
so
who speaks to English a very in-depth
and
study
like
of William Shakespeare.
Was like, well, if these people really
there are simple phrases in Shakespeare that are so brimming with truth, and the truth of the matter is fortune makes fools of us all. That's what we are. It's just the framework of your foolishness, basically. And it is a beautiful foolishness. I would never contradict that. But what I'm saying is that that's what is that's the truth about Lars von Trier's film. I almost don't want to tell you what I think the revelation of that movie is, because I wouldn't want to spoil it for you. But the fact of the matter is, when I came away from that movie, I went, oh my God, we're all retarded. We are all, every single person, we are all lost. We're like a bunch of morons out there bumping each other. And we talk about, sure, we find each other. We find each other sometimes, and we care for each other. And comfort each other, and sometimes that comfort, because of the type of person that we are, takes a really fantastically intricate form that we can express to others. That's a gift, basically, that we have. But the feeling, that's where it really is, because this has to create a feeling, right? That's the, and that goes back to what we're talking about, going to these churches. Nobody finds God in these churches. They all say to you, oh yeah, sure, we believe the pastors talk to God, and we believe when we tell everyone else that we have a personal relationship with Jesus. Jesus H. Christ. Well, come on already. You know, it's obvious that it's not true, right? So there you have it. That's the whole point, is that when you come to what is really, when you break open that head, that's what you really realize. But you're one of fortune's fools. And remember, the Tarot is a fortune deck. It's a deck of fortune, right? The wheel of fortune. That's what we're talking about. And that's what I really think having your head truly broken open is. It's being broken on the wheel. The experience doesn't have to be terrible because of the type of life that you might have led up to that point. I mean, you are a very nice guy, I think. I just get that. You obviously studied to be a nurse. I don't think that, knowing what I know about you, I don't think you're an asshole nurse. There's asshole nurses out there, and the rest of the nurses are really, they're the kind of people you almost could count on. I say almost because we're all human, right? But if there's somebody to count on, somebody who's actually going to care for you when you really need to be cared for. A nurse is just about the best and highest profession, in my opinion, and I spent a lot of time in the hospital in my life. So I think I know what I'm talking about. And I've seen evil nurses, and they're out there. There's a whole class of evil nurses. And people like you have to go in and battle against that kind of bullshit, you know? So it's a really noble thing. So I think you're really a good guy, you know? But at the end of it all, you are one of fortune's fools, like the rest of humanity. That is the true revelation of the Tarot, you know, the wheel, that we are all on the wheel, and that we must be broken by the wheel. That's why the person at the top of that wheel has a club or a sword, basically the Sphinx, of course, and the mystery of the Sphinx is what we're talking about here, you know. Not to use a too gross out of a term, but, you know, that's what's happening. There's a little sphincter in there, and we are opening it up. The mystery of the Sphinx is open to us, and that is a complex thing for those of us who, you know, and this is why the Buddhists say ignorance is bliss. They are correct in that respect. but there are other kinds of bliss.
Well, yes, okay, agreed completely.
Ignorance is a form of bliss.
Yes.
What should be said. And that's the truth of the matter, is that the ignorant, and this is what I believe, and this is how I contradict your theory, and I hope, you know, I haven't upset you too much, but that's
what
I believe.
Not at all.
Is that the point is that bliss, right? And the pathway can't be denied. It can't be denied to somebody. It can't be denied to anyone. And, you know, just to add to the whole concept of media isolation, the guy who created the I Ching, which dials right into Terence McKenna and the whole concept of apocalypse, that's what, that's when the Sufi spins, when the world starts to fall apart, right? It's like he's a magnet holding reality itself together, essentially, creating electricity, right?
That's why I have, if anybody does, I'll self-advertise a second, but that's why I have the Illuminated Gaming Group, so we can try to go back and find these games that were a little more prolific or had good ideas in them, try to make them shine a little more than, you know, just military simulators that are obviously for the purpose of military simulators.
Like the free games the military gives out?
They gave it out. Blackwater Wii game, and the military has already funded about five in the past two systems. So you don't even have to go to them and try their simulators. It is right there at Toys R Us.
You can download
right, you are. We can actually charge you for it.
Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, I noticed years ago, it's like in our corporatist empire, it's like, you know, if this was a communist empire, then they would provide all the, you know, state is going to mandate that you actually have to buy the military simulator or they'll provide it for you. In a corporatist empire, they're actually going to provide a charge for it. You're going to be excited to have it. It's a much more brave new world than that. You know, it's like, yeah, I get a lot of inside the store when I get it, and you're going to pay for it. But, yeah, when you see things with all the drones, you know, these remote controlled drones, it seems very obvious to me where military simulation just leads to actual death.
Well, I mean, I was training with drones from literally 1995, and every single video game, I really had no idea, even the James Bonds were starting to include it. And then, you know, in the last couple of years, oh, drones were created, and now they're just remote controlling bombing people and whatever. And it really fits together in my head, like I was just some jarhead, and I put the games down and decided that I needed to go kill people before I came back and found girls or whatever weird process in front of my head. And my confused
the You went to the bathroom?
It kept me alive. I'm not even a
Does anyone remember, like, one of the very first Apple home computers had a game on it where it was like a plane, and then you took this guy out of a plane to land on this. But there's, like, at the bottom of the screen is this cartoon. It's like a, like a, what do you call it, like a hay wag type thing. It's like a wagon full of hay being pulled by a mule. And there's like a plane going across the top, and you have to drop a guy out of the plane, and he has to land in the hay.
I have a vague recollection of playing that at my grandparents' house on their old fucking Apple, totally.
Yeah, I played it at my uncle's house. He had one of those. And, it's like, and I'm just thinking, like, from the earliest, as soon as we had these computers in the home, we're doing missile command and missile command and piloting discussion.
Which when I went out to see you guys in Idaho, when I went to my parents' house first, I grabbed my Atari, and with that was missile command, and I was playing, and I was like, wow, this is like they're really on it with the weird getting people excited and basically putting a wall between you and an actuality and giving a representation there, which is totally removed, and getting you into it at the same time. It's like total programming for real, you know. The fucking Atari. But what's funny is that Atari itself is named after basically the equivalent of Czech in the Chinese game of Go, right? So which is when you're basically making a territory for yourself, which is literally called an I, and you're establishing your area on a Go board. That's actually you say Atari, like right before you're about to close the circle. So in a weird way, it's like that is military
the realms that we inhabit.
It's a military thing to say Atari in the first place.
There are others out there that are aware of.
You guys know what I'm talking about? Go with the black and white.
Yeah.
And
a beautiful mind.
It's a point of exactly it. Colonizing your brain. It's like saying, okay, this territory is ours. It's a claim of territory.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why I don't. Whenever people talk about the whole moon landing thing, for the most part, I think it's a moot debate. Because whether we went or not, it's both the same political result. You either didn't go and you just wanted to beat the Russians and say, ah, the Americans made it first. Or you did go
and
what is
in an instant,
the most obvious outward result of you doing that? Is that you put an American flag on the moon? You know, it's like saying,
in a dorm room, using a substance. And experiencing what
the dawn of man
who
has dreamed of touching the moon, and we finally make that dream come true. And how do we,
for me, to acquire
by being this a seagull finding Nemo
required, you know, breaking the law.
We had a friend over last night, and who's basically been in Vietnam for a year, and ended up with this Russian woman.
And
this Russian woman was here last night. We were discussing this whole like her
say no
to. Happens for people
things,
like in relationship to Russia, like still, like talking about Russia, it's like the Houthis, it's like the Reds, it's like the whole energetic
and
of it. She
I
doesn't speak much English necessarily, but it was really kind of a trip. And I was telling her about how Dr. Strangelove, subtextually, is all about basically America trying to get it on with Russia and dropping the bomb into actually its climax.
And
it was funny because my friend's American, you know, and he ended up with this Russian woman. I'm saying, like, you know, and when she got it, it was really funny.
I think we both
what
agree
I was saying,
that
you know, like,
that was actually a very
Mother Russia, and then they're finally like, okay, we got it. But I mean, the moon itself, like the rocket that we built, it was like the phallic thing ever.
I made that conclusion in that
Dr. Strangelove, the art director, says
led to
basically
very,
everything
very
humans make are like penises and vaginas, and that whole opening scene of the planets
and
people and these, you know, sex acts in that movie.
Yeah, and then I mean, it's Project Paperclip in the first place, right? Like, those are not some scientists at, you know, JPL who are building those
in
the first place. And it's like, did they not know that this is going to be used for missile technology? Is
that
just like a happy accident? Like, I don't know. Like, it seems pretty straightforward, you know?
So,
where is there any
back now to conspiracy,
prophecy, or any
things that we discussed in this conversation
to any,
I guess it would be about control and conspiracy and how you come to terms with recognizing that for the first time.
What is it? Like, no one can claim
that's a pretty great relationship, so I hope you don't smile if I attack it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, let's start right with the term conspiracy itself. As I mentioned before, it means to breathe together.
It reminds me of this. I don't have the real answer. It reminds me of this comic I was reading 20 minutes ago, where this is like a 50s or 60s weird fantasy comic, where this guy tries to go in space. I forget what happens, but he winds up talking to this alien who has baby reptilians doing his construction work for him, who explained to him that humans should have never come out of space, and if they try again, they're going to blow him up again. The first time humans went into space, that whole left brain thing messed them up so bad that they actually had to blow up the planet, and humans were going to come try to blow up Mars. They didn't really explain where the aliens live, but I see that theme so many times in science fiction. The aliens, once they get two or three humans comfortably close in their UFO or whatever, explaining that, you know, this is why we never went back. You do us as monsters and you put each other up and you would blow us up. And, you know, when the Atlantis conflict went down, we never named by name and spell. The older civilizations that had greater power or whatever, you know, were knocked out by the
same thing. You yourself say that on the use of these anti-jets, that these drugs affect your breathing more than anything else. This is one of the critical things that you need to know.
Day the earth that's going there, like a robot, connection there.
They get your breathing,
no,
they make
your
breathing. the breathing becomes perfect. You begin to breathe in synchronicity with the environment.
Ultimate experience on uniting the world is all feeling space and the reality. So basically, it happens. New York is completely obliterated. Everyone's dead. And certain images that I guess resonates with the story. And one of those like poses from the day the earth stood still is interesting. And of course, in that movie, they threaten humanity that we're going to destroy
you.
Yeah.
Here
we
have
a rock.
What happens to them?
Well, that's a perfect.
When they can't see
Okay, Bill. The first time that I ever actually seriously, basically at this point, I don't believe that footage that we see of the moon is real. Not to say that I don't think we went to the moon, but I wouldn't make an authoritative statement that this is a fact. But the argument for Stanley Kubrick filming that shit is so strong. Like, all of that shit, you can always find the line in the back screen projection. Like, in, like, every fucking photograph and every fucking everything. And you can see how they slowed down the footage, you know, to give the appearance that they're, like, moving in, like, the slow motion footage. Like, all of that, like, I don't buy it. That's not to say I don't buy that we went to the moon, but I think that was a pre-recorded briefing made prior to our departure, you know?
Well, because they really didn't know what was up there. And if you broadcast to the entire world a true live shot of the moon, and one of those guys gets attacked by a space dog, I mean, what do people on the streets do? It would be, everyone would devour themselves. I mean, or would we have some sort of resiliency and we'd be able to talk about it and say, well, is it a Christian space dog or a Jewish space dog? Is it a bug? I mean, the people would lose their fucking layers.
Two things.
You need a backup plan, or they knew all along what they were doing.
Again, a reference to toys, but also
okay, guys. You seen Capricorn 1?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, O.J. Simpson. Okay, I don't know, man. That's weird. I mean, I saw it a long time ago, and I hadn't thought about it in so long, and it's Mars. So they faked the Mars mission, you know? But, like, I don't... Wow.
Yeah, that movie really well. And there's a lot of stuff that you could be wondering forever about these conspiracies, and you're watching the movie, and it's like, Oh, Cat just walked straight up to the space shuttle across the thing we'd all see on the news, but it's too far away to actually see, and basically, like, put a gun in the cockpit or open the cockpit very forcefully and be like, yo, you know, we're going to burn your family, you know, that you're playing right now, even if you have to start listening to exactly what you are now, what the plan is now, whatever. It's very easy to screw someone over like that and start a conspiracy, and in that movie, there's no thick, you know, literature about Trump-based mind control or anything like that. It's just, they bring the guys in the room, and they're like, this isn't the reality anymore, but we have to have the people believe that. You have a problem with it, your family's not going to be alive anymore. Questions, you know? I want to mention that I talked to Mike Ibarra about a week ago.
See, now here he's struggling inside the locker itself. That smoke could actually be seen as water.
Sure.
Right. Well, steam, and so you have steam is the most etheric state of water, right? So.
You know, David, I wanted to tell you that as I watched this film, I couldn't help but associating you with Peter Tork.